Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Kevin was at a wrestling match last night that ended up on penalty kicks.
It went down to Criteria H, which is first points scored in each bout.
Ah, so that's stupid. Next.
I mean, well, they're sitting there at the scorer's table, and I leaned over to my buddy, and I said, they've got to be down around the seventh or eighth right now.
Sorry, but that's just the wrong way to do it.
Well, I mean, how else do you finish a wrestling match that's tied? I hate ties, so I wouldn't want to see a tie.
Look, just have two guys go in the parking lot, and whoever survives, you win.
I think the PIAA frowns upon that type of idea.
Well, who cares? Here's one of the great stories that is coming up at the end of this month. And it deals with media. It deals with television. Coming up on NBC Sports Net and Universal Sports Network, Curling Night in America.
Yes.
Curling is officially on the rise in America. ESPN announced a deal to televise some of the biggest professional events in Canada on ESPN3. Now NBC Sportsnet getting into the act. In conjunction with the World Curling Federation, U.S. Curling Association, and the United States Olympic Committee, NBC Sports Group and Universal Sports Network will debut Curling Night in America in 2015, combining to present 24 hours of coverage from the inaugural U.S. Curling Grand Prix on NBC Sportsnet and Universal Sports Network. It'll premiere on NBC Sportsnet on Friday, January 23rd. And this will all run through Friday, March 13th, and include Universal Sports as well. It'll comprise four men's and four women's teams from top rinks in the United States, China, Japan, and New Zealand, competing in the inaugural U.S. Curling Grand Prix. I would like to point out to all of you, though, that this has already taken place.
Yeah, it won't be. In fact, it's not live, is it?
The event has been over now for a month.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that was the event that was over for a while.
It took place December 4th through the 6th. So there you go. Every Friday night starting on January 23rd, you can get your curling fix. Nothing like shuffleboard on ice. This is where we bring in Brewer's Outlet. That's the only way I'd get through it.
I have my DVR ready to go anyway. I don't care that it's recorded.
DVR? You're going to DVR this?
You betcha.
How often do you fast forward?
It depends. It depends on how close the match is. Like, I'll fast forward through the long discussion. That's the problem I have with curling. The long discussions and analyzing. It's like, listen, turn the stone, curl it, get it going.
Do you want to know why?
Well, my reasoning and your reasoning aren't going to be the same, so let me hear yours.
Because the vast majority of time, nothing is happening.
That's what I figured yours would be.
What's your reason? Mine makes sense.
I think there needs to be a limit on the strategy time that's available. I know they do have a limit in time, but it's too long.
Blah, 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 blah. Look, there's a reason they don't televise chess.
Okay. Well, this proves one thing. There is a market for curling in America.
This proves one thing.
NBC Sports needs coverage.
You have a lot of 24-hour sports channels that are aching to put anything on.
Knew that was coming.
Okay? Tennis. Here's tennis. You want to know how many hours of tennis the ESPN family and networks is putting on in the coming year? 600 hours.
That's a lot of tennis. That's more than Grand Slams.
It should be pointed out that Chris Fowler, that when he is done with Monday night's national championship game, will then go to Australia because coverage on the 19th begins in Melbourne. And he will do the Australian Open, the French Open, the Wimbledon, of course, and the U.S. Open. ESPN 600 hours also includes the Chattanooga Open. Fowler's not going to be there, but the crew will be. Six. 100 hours. Why? Because it filled. And that's why I, for example, the people that come up and say, and I always love this, there are too many bowl games. There's too many bowl games. Okay, let's take this in two parts. Number one, the ratings show you're watching. Pinstripe goal, you got a 2.4 rating. Or 2.6. 2.6 rating. Fabulous. National championship semifinal got a 15 plus. People are watching Pinstripe Bowl, Bitcoin Bowl, Belk Bowl. People are watching. They're staggered out. People were watching games on January 2nd. Bars all over this country have the games on somewhere from December 20th through January 3rd. So for two solid weeks, they have their bill filled with college football, and people are watching it. How many people, it was one of the worst games of the bowl season, but how many people actually took a few minutes and watched some of the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve at 8 o'clock? Because at about 9 o'clock at night, like, hey, it's a football game. I'll watch a little bit of a football game. Because at that point, you know, it's early evening. You kind of had your fill, whatever. Earlier in the day, you had that dramatic ending to the Bahamas Bowl. 26th, day after. And that was a travel day for me. I went to New York. I had to broadcast a bowl game. It's great. It's great for the kids. It's great for the programs. It's great for ESPN. They own these bowl games. College basketball, wall-to-wall men's college basketball. All over the place. And that's the staple of the programming. Putting games on means something. So now you have Curling Night in America. Well, why does NBC Sportsnet have Curling Night in America? Well, it helps set up their Winter Olympic coverage, which it's going to be, in Siberia next time, isn't it?
What is the winter? Is that Pyongyang?
It's in South Korea. Yeah. Maybe they can have their website hacked by the people above the DMZ. And that's in, 2018? So we have 3 years to go before we get to that.
Yeah, 2018, right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this helps set it up. It also keeps it's also a winter sport being aired in late January through February and into early March. It also goes along with the fact that NBC Sportsnet carries hockey, a lot of hockey, plenty of NHL, all the time. And this goes, you're trying to find programs. What program can you air? And you can't just do 24 hours of talking heads. You can't. as important as the two talking heads on this program happen to think they are, you can't do 24 hours of it. They made the decision here that maybe in a two-hour dose a day might be just enough.
Just maybe.
Just enough. But that's what it's about. And we have a good time. And by the way, I want to thank James Franklin and Jack Ham for calling in on birthday day today. I know on the Mark Lawrence show, I was very touching when the Northumberland County Commissioners called in and sang. That was very touching. We will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. You like the fact that James Franklin revealed to the world I'm not a big Twitter guy.
No surprise to this veteran campaigner.
Normally he puts out birthdays on his Twitter account. Well, that's why he called the show today. He said, since you're not a big Twitter guy. What?
Been here a year, knows you like the book. Can read you like a book.
Yes. Well. Yeah, you know, a year ago we didn't even know each other.
That's almost a year.
It'll be a year on Sunday.
I was gonna say, is it mid January? Because I remember the best of had the first appearance.
January 11th. January 11th. And looking forward to it. Bottom of the hour, news update coming up. Deadly terror attack in France. Sarah Bartlow have more of that. Also, check on our website at WKOK.com. Great story on 1,000 pounds worth of butter sculptures down in Harrisburg. How about that?
That's an annual tradition there for the farm show.
Yes, it is. The farm show is underway. Great news. And I noticed that Mark Lawrence has backed off on his promos calling you the best producer in the world.
I really didn't take notice, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh, no, everybody's noticed right away. Has there been a falling out we don't know about?
Not that I'm aware of, but...
Usually the last to know.
That's true.
800-795-9565. Jump in. Jameis Winston opting for the NFL draft in a stunning, shocking move.
I was amazed.
Again, the off-the-field issues, I think, do come into play to a point. I mean, they do come into play to a point because it does bring into question judgment. And that is a spot. There's certain spots in sports where you have to have that judgment guy. I need great judgment on and off the field or the floor from my quarterback, my point guard. I need that. And that'll come into play. You have the top two teams in this draft, Tampa Bay and Tennessee, that need quarterbacks. I know you broached the subject of trading earlier. Well, if they do trade the Eagles, for example, it would have to involve Nick Foles would have to be one of the guys dealt. You can't sit there if you're Tampa Bay or Tennessee and trade the first or second overall pick in the draft to Philadelphia unless you get a quarterback in return. Because essentially you are giving up a quarterback to do this.
And you need one that has some longevity too.
And you'd need that. And Nick Foles, you know, it's not going to be Mark Sanchez. And that's what I think is going, if you're going to talk about making a deal with either one of those two teams, a quarterback has to be in the mix as to who's in the trade. Has to be. Roger called earlier about the Redskins. Well, if you're making it, say the Redskins wanted to move up again, like they did to get RG3, and of course they gave up a lot to get him. And the Rams, I think, already had Sam Bradford, so they wouldn't be looking for a quarterback. But say they did this time, and say Tampa Bay or Tennessee, they're enamored with, look, if we get RG3, we can turn him around. They'll say they have that mindset. He'd have to be included in the trade. Because neither team is great at quarterback right now, and in this league, you must be at least good at quarterback to go anywhere. Arizona, when they had Carson Palmer quarterback, and you may not be a big Carson Palmer guy because of your jaded Bengals experience, but Carson Palmer is a very good NFL quarterback. And when Carson Palmer was running the Arizona Cardinals show, they had the best record in the NFL. And their points per game was high. It was in the mid-20s. Then after he fell out, they lost out. You have to have good quarterback play in this league, or you're going nowhere in this league. Winston is in Bellefonte. Hi, Winston, how are you?
I sure am good, Steve. Second time caller, but long time listener. Love the show. Do you think Winston's decision making is good enough for the NFL? Last year he was amazing. This year he threw 20 interceptions, including the game he was in last week where he got crushed and looked like an idiot. Do you think he'll be able to have good enough decision making to be good in the NFL? He was stacked at Florida State with the talent he had around him, but he didn't lose until his last game. But is his decision making good enough in that stage, do you think? Because I thought he looked like a bonehead a lot of the times. He almost lost to BC, he almost lost to a bunch of other teams because his decision making wasn't good, and he was terrible in the first half of almost every single game.
I think, number one, you're spot on, Winston, and it's something that has to be examined. When Jameis Winston played last year and won the Heisman Trophy, he was a redshirt freshman who had never played in a college game. Thus, nobody had a book on him. So you went by a week-by-week evaluation as to what he could, couldn't do, what he liked, didn't like, and doing that on the fly isn't easy. Defensive coordinators don't spend 12 hours a day on the golf course in the offseason. They spend a lot of time in the office breaking down tape. What do you do? What do you like to do? What are you uncomfortable doing? What's your crutch when you get in trouble? Can we take your crutch away when you're in trouble? Can we disguise a coverage that you haven't seen before? Can we give you a false pre-read that will confuse you that isn't on last year's tape? That's what they do. And I've talked about this in a baseball analogy, and Winston is a fine baseball pitcher with Florida State and could be a draftable guy as well in baseball because of his arm. But in baseball, when you come out and you're a phenom, and Winston, you know this, you come out of the gate and everybody goes, wow, look at you. And then what happens is everybody gets a book and then they adjust, and almost every phenom slumps. The ones that have longevity are the ones that adjust back. Well, Winston, everybody adjusted to him this past season, and I thought he did a mediocre job of adjusting back. My opinion, maybe it sounds like you share it.
Yeah, do you think he'll be successful at the next level?
I think he'll be good at the next level. Let's look at the basics. He's 6'5". He has a big arm. His mobility's good, not great. I'm with you. I think his decision making needs to improve.
I don't think he's as athletic as people think he is.
No, he's not.
A little bit awkward running the ball.
I agree with you. I think it's good, not great mobility. And I think that when he's been under pressure, blitzes and so forth, he hasn't reacted as well, as evidenced by the Rose Bowl game, but that's not the first time we saw that happen. Look at the game against Louisville. What did he throw, 4 interceptions in the first half? Some number like that.
If you want to throw the game in the first half, that's what you do, though.
Interest. that was the accusation. But I'm with you. But I also know that in this league, you need a quarterback. With that said, I would take a long, hard look at drafting him because Tampa Bay and Tennessee are going to go nowhere with the people they currently have. He could bring them somewhere because I think he's a cut above what they have now. Fair enough?
I think that's fair enough. Happy birthday, Dad.
Daniel.
I couldn't go with Lionel this year. It's too obvious. Too obvious.
Yeah, it's always too obvious, LT3.
That's why when he says Winston, I just start laughing to myself. I'm like, I like that.
I know,
that's good.
I know. It's LT3. Just make sure you're warmed up at the golf course before
I'll go out. I'll just cheat instead. That's the only way I'll just cheat.
Oh yeah, right. I've seen the way you're playing.
The old foot wedge.
Yeah, I mean he's in the bunker, hand wedge on four. What?
Oh no! Another birdie. What a round!
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. If you had a guy who in his career hit 309 home runs, at 2,247 hits, and hit 312 in his 18-year career, how many votes for the Hall of Fame do you think he deserves? .312 batting average, 309 home runs, 2,247 hits. 514 doubles in an 18-year career, two batting championships, hit over 300, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 times in his career. So is that guy Hall of Fame worthy to you?
Depends now. You can't answer that question as easily as you could have maybe 20 years ago.
No suspicion whatsoever.
Okay.
How about that?
All right. That's the big thing for me right now.
No suspicion.
I would think there's a better than average chance that he would get into the Hall of Fame with those kind of numbers, hitting 300 especially.
Unfortunately, he also has the label of being DH from Seattle. That's Edgar Martinez. It was put out Randy Johnson when he was announced yesterday. It shows the kind of guy Randy Johnson is. And Randy Johnson took the time yesterday saying, look, Edgar Martinez should be in. Obviously, we're broadcasters. Broadcasters do not have a vote.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but not because I'm a broadcaster. I just don't understand why it's a writer's thing only.
No, they're the ones that got it rolling, but I've always laughed at the fact that you're telling me that Vin Scully doesn't have a vote for the Hall of Fame.
Right. He hasn't seen enough baseball?
Vin Scully doesn't have a vote. Bob Uecker doesn't have a vote for the Hall of Fame. John Miller doesn't have a vote for the Hall of Fame. Milo Hamilton. Mike Shannon. No offense. They may do it with the spoken word, but they know the game and they know who they're watching. They don't have votes. That's the big, that part to me needs some scrutiny. And I know this is the Baseball Writers Association of America voting, and you have to be a voting member. I assume you have to be a dues-paying member. I do understand that. But if I'm the Baseball Hall of Fame, don't I have the right to amend my rules as to who votes? Now, obviously, and I'll give you an example. People have asked me, I vote for all Big Ten football, all Big Ten basketball, and I have a vote for the Wooden Award. People have always asked me why I don't have a vote for the Heisman Trophy. Now, I've had a lot of people ask me that. And Jack doesn't have a vote for the Heisman Trophy either. And the answer is simple. Because I am paid by Penn State to broadcast the games, that's what keeps me from not voting. And I've been told by people that have said, hey, look, we know you would be fair. So that's not in question, because I mean they know how I vote on other things. I vote it, I see it, I go from there. I think a Penn State player is first team worthy, I vote him first team. If I don't think he's worthy, I don't vote for him. Simple as that. Very rarely have I voted there have been times, Michael Robinson as an example, Darryl Clark as an example, where I voted them as Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year. And I did vote for Mike Hall as Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. And I put Joey Bosa second. Okay. I did do that. But I also watched Mike Hall play every game, and I thought Mike Hall was really, really good in every game. And I thought Joey Bosa was really, really good in a lot of games, but not every game I saw. You can take a defensive end out of the scheme based on how the style of game. For example, what kind of game did Bosa... Bosa's an excellent player, but what kind of game did he have against Alabama? And his ability to have a really good game against Oregon is going to be neutralized. A really good middle linebacker that is on the field every single time and is making play after play after play, no matter what style of game, he's going to be involved in the mix all the time. Against Oregon, what kind of game is Joey Bosa going to have? 3-sack performance? Don't think so. That ball is going to be out of his hands like that. Or because of his pure speed, he'll be able to get to the edge. He's going to be very hard to track down. And that has nothing to do with him being a great player. Joey Bosa is going to be a first-round NFL pick when it's his time to come out. I think he's just done with his sophomore year. So, for him, the decision will be at the end of next season. But you can neutralize a defensive end based on style of game. You really can't neutralize a middle linebacker on style of game. That's why Mike Hall had 140 tackles this year. He had 140 tackles in 13 games. Interception, fumble recoveries, sacks. He ended up being a second-team All-American. So voting for him is not out of the realm. But I think when it gets back to the Baseball Writers Association and why don't broadcasters have a vote, I think that there is a perception that since most broadcasters are paid by the club, not all of them, but are paid by the club, they don't want them voting for the Hall of Fame, that there could be professional prejudice involved.
Okay. Then the argument that I make to that is, how is that different than a writer that reports on the same team all season long.
Because they're paid by the paper.
There's no bias there, though?
You're paid by the paper. You're not drawing a paycheck from the club.
I understand the paycheck part, but if you're talking just on bias, I don't think you can make that argument anymore. Now, are you able to be are you able to be a little more critical of the team because you're not paid them? Yeah. But you are, there is going to be a little bias if it's a team you cover all year long.
Well, you're going to be able to sit there, and I know, for example, in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I think the way it works is that somebody on the committee can present a name, but then they're not allowed to vote on the name. And each city that's been in the league is represented, including past cities where there's no longer a team. For example, Los Angeles still has voting members in the Pro Football Hall of Fame because there are Los Angeles Rams that would be considered, or Los Angeles Raiders. Or even, one year, the Los Angeles Chargers. So, but when you are paid by the club, I think that's the distinction right there. It does not give you the perception of complete independence. How about that?
No, I understand that. I mean, that, but the other side of that is if you have the Writers Association and broadcasters both voting for this, it should actually avoid a bias of any sort because of the number of people that are voting.
Oh, I think the broadcasters should be voting too. I think that part should change. You're still going to have writers go off and do whatever they want. I mean, take, for example, Pete Rose. Several people wrote in Pete Rose's name on this year's ballot. Well, it doesn't matter if Pete Rose got 75% of the vote. Say 75% of the writers wrote in Pete Rose's name. I can tell you right now exactly what would happen. Pete Rose is ineligible to go into the Hall of Fame.
But what bothers me more than anything are writers that have a Hall of Fame ballot that said, well, I'm not voting for anybody that's eligible in their first year. I don't care how good they are. And I've heard that. I've heard that comment. Sure. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. Why? If you don't have the numbers to be in the Hall, if you have the numbers to be in the Hall of Fame in year 2, 3, and 4, why don't you have numbers in year 1?
Well, I understand that. I've always looked at it this way. I think there are certain players that deserve the distinction of first ballot. You know, as the additional honor. For example, when Derek Jeter comes up, Derek Jeter deserves the distinction of being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I would also agree with that.
As a distinction. Craig Biggio was just voted in. What was it, his third try? Third year?
I think. I was trying to think. The reason I wasn't, you caught me off guard, is I was thinking of Ken Griffey Jr. Next year as a first ballot.
Well, he'll be a first ballot. He deserves it. I think there are certain players that have that distinction. Then there's a guy like, take for example, Craig Biggio. Biggio in his second year, I would put in as a Hall of Famer. With my ballot basically stating that Derek Jeter is not only a Hall of Famer, but he's special. Craig Biggio is a Hall of Famer, but you know, I would reserve the first ballot for a Jeter. And then the second year, boy, I'd be pushing hard every year after that to get a guy like Biggio in.
You know, I was listening to Dan Patrick earlier today here on WKOK, and he had an interesting thought And he was just kind of thinking out loud, what if, along with the writers, what if members of the Hall of Fame had, the living members of the Hall of Fame actually voted who they felt should join them? I mean, isn't it that way with the Heisman? If you've won the Heisman, you have a vote. Is that correct?
You have a vote.
I would think that makes sense in this particular case as well.
Sure. And Frank Robinson, it's interesting. I'll tell you a guy that's in the Hall of Fame that's very opinionated. It's Frank Robinson. And Frank Robinson is a no-nonsense guy. And Frank Robinson, they asked him about Pete Rose. Should Pete Rose ever be in the Hall of Fame? His answer, boom, no. Wow. I mean, it didn't take him long to say no. And I think for the most part, Hall of Famers do follow the game enough. And they should have a ballot. And I also think certain broadcasters should have a ballot. Again, you're telling me Vin Scully doesn't have a vote? There isn't anybody out there on the planet that doesn't think Vin Scully doesn't know the game inside out. And the, the writers universally deeply respect him because of his deep and great knowledge and his history of the game.
And I wouldn't split it apart either. I wouldn't make it just, national broadcasters that were allowed to vote and not baseball broadcasters in general. I think it would have to be all or nothing to me.
What do you mean all or nothing?
Well, I'll give you an example. Vin Scully could not vote because he's the Dodgers broadcaster, but Jack Buck could because he does national games.
Joe Buck, rather.
Sorry. I had a flashback for a minute.
But Joe Buck's not a member of the Baseball Writers Association.
No. I'm saying if you're going to allow broadcasters and you only allow those that do national coverage and not the ones that do baseball coverage in general, that's what I was saying. I would think in that case, I think it has to be an all or nothing. If you're going to let them all. If they're not, then don't.
If they elect to be a dues-paying member of the Baseball Writers, first of all, they should be allowed, if they want to be a dues-paying member of the Baseball Writers Association of America, that obviously covers the team on an everyday basis. It's only one vote, for goodness sakes. It's not like you're going to sit there and Ted Leitner is going to get suddenly 80 broadcasters in San Diego to suddenly start pushing Jake Peavy for the Hall of Fame.
Because
when Peavy was the Padres, or Nate Colbert, Nate Colbert's going to be in the Hall of Fame because you're only one vote.
I'm sure there's a simple explanation, but why is it the Baseball Writers Association that votes?
Because back in 1939, the Baseball Writers Association of America was the one that got it rolling.
Okay, did they build the Hall of Fame?
Did they build it?
Right. Did they build the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, the Professional Baseball Hall of Fame?
No, but the rules have used them as the voting body.
And I understand that. Now, if they were the ones that built the Hall of Fame, if it's the Professional Baseball Hall of Fame run by the Writers Association, then I'm fine with them having the only vote.
And
you understand what I'm saying?
Sitco.
But do you see what that's what I'm saying? They're not the ones that created it. They just are lucky enough to have a vote.
Well, it is the tradition as to how they've done it.
I mean, things change. And maybe at the time when all this started, there wasn't nearly the television coverage that there is now. And I would be willing to bet that's the case.
Well, if they wanted to join, to me, these are people that are watching baseball on an everyday basis. I mean, I talked to Tim Neverett back on December 20th. And, of course, I've seen Tim a couple times in December. Tim does the Pirates games. He knows what he's watching. He knows who he's watching. Right? He can look at said player and say, you know what? Great player. you end up seeing other players from other teams as often as the writers do. You play 18 games against the Cincinnati Reds, you're going to be able to sit there and look at Frazier for 18 games during the year, which happens to be exactly as many games as the voting member of the Baseball Writers Association who covers your team will see him too. Right? Okay, we'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kevin moonwalking across the studio. Jason just posted on our Facebook page that someone was blowing up balloons.
Yeah, he said that he just drove by and saw James Franklin blowing up balloons for you for your birthday. I thought that was really nice.
If you missed it in the 3:30 half hour, his call into the show. Along with Jack Ham. The James Franklin revelation, I didn't really think you were a big Twitter guy.
As you would say, Steve, spot on with that one.
Spot on.
Have a great rest of your birthday, buddy.
Jack talking about the sweater Joanne sent. Oh, I sent him a picture of me in the sweater. That's what the reference was that he made on the show about
all right.
Me being in GQ. No, he's the only other person that has that picture. That picture is not for distribution.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.
All righty.